Broadcasting live from the Roswell Infinity Studio, located inside Digital Ignition, where North Atlanta startups take off. It's time for North Fulton Business Radio.
And hello again, everyone. Welcome to another edition of North Fulton Business Radio. I'm John Ray, your host, along with a very interesting guest. I've been looking at some of the things we're going to talk about, and I think you're going to enjoy our guest today. But before we get into that, I want to remind everyone that our show is live here in Digital Ignition, inside Digital Ignition, and Digital Ignition is the ultimate place for entrepreneurs to work, innovate, learn, establish, and grow their companies. Nestled within a 45,000-square-foot building is an open floor plan with co-working office space, dedicated desk, private offices, meeting rooms, event space, a fantastic break room with outdoor patio, and all the fresh ground coffee you can drink. If you want great co-working as well as space which impresses investors, customers, and future employees, visit digitalignition.com. Now let's get to the good stuff. Ken Crossan.
Yes, sir. How are you doing?
Did I get your name right?
Close enough. Crossan, yes.
Crossan. Okay, cool. Ken Crossan from Piedmont Injury Law.
That's right.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Yeah, thanks for being here. And you came from Marietta, so thanks for doing that.
Yeah, you know, it wasn't much of a haul, though. It was an easy drive.
North Atlanta, right?
Well, you never know what's going to happen.
You never know what's going to happen. Like a car crash, right? We're gonna be talking about that.
Yeah, we deal with a lot of those. Thankfully, nothing like that happened on our way over.
Thankfully. I would hate to get in the accident with an injury attorney.
Well,
would be bad news, right?
I have been rear-ended.
My fault, right?
I was rear-ended a couple years ago, and the guy did seem pretty nervous when we exchanged information, and I gave him my business card. He just kind of hung his head like, oh my goodness, what have I done? But I wasn't hurt, so there was no injury claim from that. I just got my car fixed and went on my way. I'm not looking to make things out of make things into things they're not.
He was the most grateful man alive when he found out you weren't hurt, right?
I mean, dodged a bit of a bullet, I guess you could say. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So we've obviously gotten into a little bit about what Piedmont Injury Law is all about, but give us some background on your firm, Ken.
Right. Well, I've been practicing for about 10 years. Started off out of Georgia State Law School, Georgia State University College of Law. Worked for a couple small firms doing a variety of things, including some plaintiff side personal injury work, did some insurance defense work, a variety of litigation. And for me, it's a second career. So I went to law school about probably 10 years later than your typical law student. So when I got out, I was impatient, ready to go. And I worked for a couple firms for a little while and then decided to go out on my own and started off kind of, I'm sure a lot of your business listeners will recognize this. You open your doors and, man, it's just, it's nerves all the time.
I've
got a family. At that point, it was family of five. We're now family of six. And you're responsible for paying all the bills, right? So kind of opened up the doors and was just doing whatever I could competently handle. But over the course of the first couple of years, realized that what I really felt passionate about was righting the injustices that you see in the way that insurance companies deal with personal injury claims. It was what I did the most of, did the best, and really felt the strongest about. So we narrowed our focus down to basically at this point, we just handle personal injury claims on the plaintiff side. It's what we do best. It's what we can provide the most value for our clients doing.
Good stuff. Now, talk a little bit, Ken, about we talked about the aforementioned car crash. So if I'm in a car crash, what should I do? Besides call you.
I'm not even going to say that. I mean, I think in a lot of cases, if you're injured in a car crash, it's a good idea to get an injury attorney, somebody who focuses on that area of law, involved. They can add a lot of value and help you out in a lot of ways, not just financially, but a lot of ways from the beginning of the process. If that's me, great. But somebody that you know and that you trust. The first thing and the thing I emphasize with all of my clients is that my concern is primarily for the client's overall well-being. And the biggest thing when you're injured in a car crash, of course, is going to be your health. I see clients who've had very minor injuries. There was my own instance where I got rear-ended and honestly just wasn't hurt at all. My neck was sore for like 2 days and I was fine. But then we have clients who have life-changing injuries that even years after the wreck, they're still dealing with the consequences. They have surgeries, they have physical limitations, and of course, you know, we've also seen the cases where, you know, there are fatalities involved. But if you've been injured in a car wreck, I think the first thing you need to do is look at the medical side. If you're on the scene of the wreck and you believe that you've been injured, even if you just suspect it, and a lot of times it's hard to tell because you get hit, your adrenaline is up.
Sure.
You know how it is when you're like when you're really moving around and your adrenaline's running, you don't feel pain like you do when you calm down and cool down. So if you have even a suspicion that you might be injured, I think you need to go get it checked out. You know, there are all the horror stories you can read out there about people who've been injured in a car crash or a similar incident, and they suffered a neck injury that they just didn't know about, you know, a fractured vertebrae or something. And then, you know, a day later, a week later, a couple weeks later, they have some other incident, you know, slipping down the steps or, you know, falling off a chair, and they're paralyzed because they had this fracture walking around with them and they didn't realize it. So better safe than sorry. If you think you've been hurt, go get checked out. There's the emergency room always. You can go to your primary care physician if that's convenient, and just have a qualified physician look you over and make sure that you don't have anything seriously dangerous that you need to deal with, because you just don't want to let that go untreated. Generally, though, you want to follow up on your treatment. If you've been hurt, go to your doctor. Go to the hospital. Go to, you know, urgent care. Go to a chiropractor. You know, start somewhere. A competent, qualified person that you trust is going to take care of you. And then if they need to escalate, send you up to somebody else, they can go ahead and do that. But, you know, I always tell my clients, look, if you're still hurting, you're not done treating. And sometimes people are willing to just accept that, okay, well, now I've been hurt and now my life isn't as good, but that's just the way it's going to be. I try to encourage my clients not to do that. Try to get that maximum possible medical recovery.
Sure. Now, what happens in a case like that? I mean, I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but if you have a situation where there's some medical problems that are found later after a claim has been paid, what happens in that case?
Right. Well, you know, the expression we use is you get one bite at the apple. So if you're trying to make a legal, a financial recovery for injuries that you sustained from somebody else's negligence, and, you know, that's the key. We're not just talking about something that just happened because life happens, but something that happened because somebody else was behaving in a way they shouldn't have been behaving and caused you an injury. You get one shot. Once you accept a settlement, you sign a release, you can't come back later and say, oh, you know, my injuries were worse than I thought they were, which is one of the reasons it's really helpful to have an attorney or somebody who deals with this on a regular basis on your side looking into this for you, because they can help make sure that before you enter into any kind of release, you've actually figured out exactly what the extent of your damages is.
We're speaking with Ken Croissant, and Ken is the owner, founder of Piedmont Injury Law. Ken, talk a little bit about the insurance coverages that you should have to right. best protect you before you even get into that accident.
Well, when you're driving around, we're talking a lot about car crashes. A large percentage of our cases come from car crashes. Not all of them do, though. But when we're talking about automobile insurance, obviously everybody has to have liability insurance. You're required by law, if you're going to drive a car in Georgia, you have to have liability insurance. But the limits that the law requires are very low. So you only have to have coverage of $25,000 per person for bodily injury claims, with a maximum of $50,000 for, you know, if there are multiple people injured. You can look at it from different perspectives, right? If you look at it from the side of, well, if I'm driving around and I possibly am going to hit somebody, how much insurance should I have? Well, my preference is you have as much insurance as you possibly can have. Obviously, in my industry, that's helpful for me. But also, I'll admit, I'll make a confession here on the radio, that for a lot more years than I'd like to admit, I was driving around with a minimum limits policy. Now, this was before I got into doing personal injury law and looking at this and going, what am I doing? I've got a house. You know, I've got I'm not rolling in money, but I've got money in the bank. I've got a car. I've got, you know, a family depending on me. If I go and hurt somebody badly, and that person comes after me for compensation, and all I have is a $25,000 insurance policy, that's not going to cover me very far. So
you've you're penny wise and pound foolish in that instance. Oh,
absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. And you know, if you see, you know, a lot of your listeners, you know, they're in the business community. If they've been successful and developed assets, they want to protect those assets, and you don't want somebody to come in and take your house because, you know, a momentary lapse when you were driving caused a significant injury, and now you're facing a claim that vastly exceeds your insurance coverage. So obviously good liability limits is a good place to start. The one that I preach all the time, though, is uninsured or underinsured motorist coverage. And most people have heard of this, but they might not know exactly what it is. And basically what it is, you know, we talked about the liability policy having that $25,000 minimum limit. Uninsured motorist coverage is basically you're purchasing an insurance policy that can stand in and insure somebody who hurts you with a vehicle and doesn't have adequate coverage, adequate insurance coverage to compensate you for the loss. So if someone comes along with a $25,000 policy, T-bones you running a red light, and puts you in the hospital for 3 days, before those 3 days are up, that $25,000 is all accounted for, right?
Sure.
And forget about any follow-up care, which there's going to be extensive follow-up care, any changes in your lifestyle, any loss of your income, you know, compensation for pain and suffering, all these things that under the law you're entitled to compensation for when somebody negligently injures you. So you can put in place a policy of your own that provides additional coverage for somebody who has injured you, who could be liable to you. So, and it really works, you know, in the way the claims are handled, it really kind of works like the insurance company steps in and insures the other guy, but it creates a greater pool for you to recover from. It's really important. We've seen some sad cases where people have been seriously injured and even killed, and they didn't have UM coverage or they didn't have much UM coverage. And you're in a situation where you've got a grievous injury and there's just nothing to recover against because the person who hit you has no insurance, has no assets. There's just nothing to go after.
Mm. That's sobering. Makes everybody wants to check their insurance coverage right now, right, before they get back on the road.
And UM coverage, I'm telling you, I should probably be an insurance salesman. UM coverage is not very expensive, and it gives you a great peace of mind. So if somebody does cause you an injury, you've got a way to recover for it.
I think you just sold some insurance today, Ken.
I've got some referrals I can give you.
I think you did a service to folks there. Talk a little bit about Uber and Lyft. So if I'm a customer of Uber riding in one of their vehicles, one of their drivers, we get in an accident, who is liable for my injuries if I'm injured?
Yeah, Uber and Lyft are on my mind because we've had a number of cases involving rideshare services recently. But there's really... We've had cases where we represent the driver of the rideshare. We've had cases where we represent the passenger in the rideshare. And then we have cases where we represent a third party who's injured by a rideshare driver. And you know, to take your instance, you're talking about the passenger. It's not tremendously different from your normal passenger situation, which is a little different from your most common scenario, which is one driver in each car. One of them's completely at fault. One of them's completely, you know, innocent, for lack of a better word. In the passenger scenario, usually you can make an argument that both the driver of the other car and very often the driver of the car the passenger was in are both to some degree liable for causing the passenger's injuries. And I'm not going to go into a big disquisition on comparative negligence in Georgia, but if you're partially responsible for your own injuries, that reduces the value of your claim. The passenger is almost never partially responsible for their own injuries. It's usually everybody else usually adds up to 100%.
Sure.
Obviously, the passenger could be grabbing the steering wheel or creating some kind of ruckus, but that's a very unusual situation. So when you're in a rideshare, and I can't speak to all the different rideshare services, but Uber and Lyft, I think I understand their insurance pretty well. When you're a rideshare driver, Uber and Lyft don't provide UM coverage for you. And boy, I hope Uber and Lyft don't want to correct me on this one, but they don't provide UM coverage for you when you're not actually involved in driving a passenger. So, you know, rideshare drivers, they're driving their own personal vehicles. So they should have their own personal insurance, and they should have, you know, UM coverage, like I just was just saying earlier.
Sure.
When they're involved in driving a passenger, though, either on their way to pick somebody up or they're actually driving a passenger to a destination, they are covered by a fairly significant policy. I understand it's $1 million limits policy, both for liability and for UM. So if you're hit by an Uber driver who just happens to be an Uber driver, they have the sticker in the window, and you're injured by that person, but that person isn't either on their way to pick up a passenger or actually driving a passenger, you're going to be limited to whatever that driver's personal insurance covers. And it's possible that that insurance company is going to deny coverage anyway, because I know we've seen this where, you know, we had a driver who started driving for Uber but hadn't talked to his insurance company about it. And when he got in a wreck on his first day, they said, yeah, we're not covering you. This is commercial use of your vehicle, and your vehicle is insured for personal use. So you might have a situation where you're completely out of luck. Great reason to have your own UM coverage.
For sure.
But if you're the customer or the passenger in the Uber, there's actually a lot of options. If the other person who hit the car was responsible, you have that person's insurance. Uber or Lyft, they provide that $1 million of UM for on top of that. And then there's $1 million of liability. So if it's the driver of the rideshare that actually caused the wreck and injured his own passenger, he's got $1 million liability policy. And then you can still have your own UM coverage. You can have UM coverage that belongs to policies of people you live with, like a spouse or family member. So the passenger is probably the one with the most options. But, yeah, I mean, we see cases involving, I guess, all the different possible combinations.
Wow, that's a lot more combinations than I would have thought, for sure. Now, I am shocked, Ken, to hear that the insurance companies may not be always looking out for the interest of those they're paying claims to. I'm just shocked to hear this. Help me understand what's going on there.
You know, I say it all the time. There are a couple ways that my industry and my business could completely disappear, and I'd be very happy if I had a magic wand and could make them happen. I'd go find something else to do with my time. You know, people could stop hurting each other by doing stupid things, and a lot of times cell phones and driving, that's huge. Or, you know, the insurance companies that are responsible for covering these kinds of claims could just pay them reasonably without, you know, having somebody twist their arm. But doesn't look like that's likely to happen anytime soon. And I'll be honest, you know, I'm a business owner, you're a business owner. I don't begrudge a business owner trying to operate his business as profitably as possible.
Sure.
And insurance companies, they're businesses. And the fewer claims they pay out and the less they pay, that's the thing. It's the combination of the fewer claims they pay out or the less they pay in claims and the less they pay in claims defense, the better they're going to be, you know, the more profitable they're going to be. So some insurance companies balance it more. They'll pay more in claims defense so they can try to pay less in claims. Some insurance companies go the other way. They pay a little bit more in claims so that they're paying less in claims defense, and they can be a little bit easier to work with. But yeah, by and large, it is a challenge, and it's one that I think people don't appreciate unless they do it a lot, how difficult these insurance companies can be, and I mean sometimes how aggressive and... I've had clients who have been, you know, 2 days after a car wreck. They have no idea. I mean, they know they're injured. They have no idea how badly they're injured. They haven't even had time to go get thoroughly checked out, you know, go get an MRI, go get a real investigation of their situation. And they've got insurance companies calling them up saying, hey, look, we'd like you to sign a waiver. Here's a check. And they'll put a little check out there that they calculate is, you know, big enough to induce this person to sign a release. They're trying to get, you know, get off the hook really cheap. And again, I don't really begrudge legitimate business practices that, you know, are aimed at maximizing your profits. But I think it's unfair to take advantage of somebody who's in a vulnerable situation like that. And I love to step in. We can put an end to that sort of thing and usually get to a much, much better result than the client could have gotten to on his own.
get all the facts in, right?
Oh, don't make decisions uninformed.
Ken Croissant, and Ken is the founder and owner of Piedmont Injury Law. So you've got some interesting thoughts about social media and how that can affect what you're able to receive in a settlement.
Well, you know, we've seen it in litigation, and I think we all know. And you, I don't know, do you have a Facebook account?
I don't want to admit this, but yes.
Okay. I do too. And
me and about 4 billion other people, but
yeah. It does not put you in a minority to have a Facebook account. But, you know, Facebook, Instagram, all those social media accounts, the way people tend to use them, and I won't say this is a universal rule, but it's a general rule, we use these accounts to brag about our lives, to make everything look great. I mean, if you looked at my Facebook, I don't post on there very much, but all you'd see is me bragging about my kids winning wrestling matches, me going skiing with my family, you know, cooking, I don't know, playing tennis. You know, my life would look like it's like nonstop recreation and excitement. And of course, that's not anybody's life, but that's what we use social media to look like. And, you know, I've seen this happen in a number of litigations. I've had this come up at trial and in mediation where, you know, a client's legitimately seriously injured, you know, in a way that negatively affects their lives, but they don't let that show when they post things on social media. They're still trying to make their lives look fun and happy and joyous and you know, just, I think we're trying to impress each other, which it's okay. That's kind of what social media is for. But you know, if you go on social media, and you know, I have one client that just stands out because this came up at trial. She was a grandmother, but really great health and very physically active. And she had some friends that she would routinely go out and go dancing with. And after the car wreck, which was significant enough that about a year or so after, she had to have neck surgery, fusion surgery in her cervical spine to stabilize her neck. And she was no longer able to dance. She was no longer able to do a lot of the things that she used to do. But when she'd still go out dancing with her friends. They'd all dress up. They'd look really happy. They'd go have a good time. But then she'd go and sit while her friends all danced. Well, the sitting, that doesn't go on Facebook.
Sure.
What goes on Facebook is me lined up with my girlfriends. Here, look at us in our great dresses, and we're going to go out and dance. And, you know, the reality is, you know, juries, they're not omniscient, you know? They only can know what's put before them. And when we use social media the way we typically use it, what we're doing is crafting a view of our lives that minimizes the bad stuff. And of course, the defense, the insurance companies, the defense lawyers are going to take that, which we've done it for them already. We've put it out there. Yeah. They're going to take that rosy version of our lives, and they're going to put that in front of the jury and say, see, this person isn't really hurt. This person doesn't really have damages.
There you go, folks. Now you know what you need to be posting on Facebook, right? All the unhappy stuff.
No, let me just be clear. No, we don't ever, like I said at the beginning, I don't ever try to make a case into something that it's not. But I know that the defense will. They will try to make the case into something that it's not. If it's a serious injury, they're going to try to make it look like it's not a serious injury.
Sure.
So I'm not going to tell a client to go out and post things on Facebook that make it look worse than it is. But probably it's a good idea when you're involved in personal injury claim or personal injury litigation, just lay off the social media.
Lay off altogether and don't worry about it, right? Now, do you handle cases that involve personal injury other than automobile accidents? Let's say slip and fall in a retail store, that kind of thing.
Sure, yeah.
Okay.
It's, maybe a quarter of our cases are slip and fall, trip and falls, you know, animal attacks. We've had some pretty unfortunate cases that came from dog bites. Hmm. I mean, any way that you can be injured, you know, we've done a little bit of medical malpractice. Those can be really challenging cases. But any case where you've been injured through somebody else's negligence, meaning they had a duty to act a certain way and they failed to act the way they had a legal duty to act, and as a result you got injured, we can handle cases of all those descriptions, yeah.
And workers' comp as well?
Right. Well, workers' comp is a little bit different. We handle cases that touch on workers' comp. Right? So workers' comp is basically a no-fault system where if you are working for an employer who's covered by the workers' comp rules, which is most employers, you know, over a couple of employees, If you're injured while you're on the job, you have a no-fault claim. Now, the meaning that it doesn't matter if your injury was because of negligence or just because something happened. It could even be your own fault. You know, you slipped and fell because you spilled your drink on the ground, then walked through it. If it was on the job, don't take that as legal advice, anybody. But if it was on the job, then you've got access to this workers' comp claim. And it's a bit more restrictive in the kinds of compensation you can receive, but you don't have to prove that anybody was at fault for it. Now, we don't handle workers' comp cases. We refer those out to a number of attorneys we trust who work in that area. But we will often handle a case that has both components. For example, a person who's driving for their job and then gets injured by somebody else while driving. They have both a workers' comp claim because they were working when they got hurt, and they have kind of a traditional personal injury claim. So, yeah, we don't handle workers' comp cases ourselves. We do work with workers' comp attorneys on the workers' comp portion of those cases, though.
Now, Ken, you alluded to our business listeners out there, business owners. Give some advice to business owners in terms of their coverages and the kind of things they need to watch out for to protect themselves and their business. You know, against accidents happen, right? And things happen that are just a fact of human foibles. Talk about how they should protect themselves.
Sure. Well, you know, my first answer in a lot of these cases is insurance. You know, and I can't possibly give an answer that would apply to anything more than a small segment of your audience. You sit down with your insurance agent and you do a comprehensive evaluation of your business, what your business owns, what your business does, who works there, and you know what you're trying to protect and what the reasonable likelihood is of an incident arising that's going to create liability. And you work with your insurance agent. That's they are really wizards when it comes to figuring that sort of thing out. The other one that I would harp on is, you know, the biggest cause of liability is going to be your employees. Do good background checks. You know, make sure you know who it is you're working with. You don't want to end up on the wrong end of, you know, what we call negligent hiring, negligent supervision case. So yeah, you need to hire non-negligently. You need to supervise non-negligently. I'd be, you know, really careful about, you know, what exactly it is that your employees are doing, and that drawing that distinction between the activities they're doing that are personal and the activities they're doing that are representative of your business. But yeah, I think ultimately it comes down to making sure you have people who aren't going to create situations that are going to incur liability for you, supervising them properly to make sure that they don't, and then making sure you have an insurance backstop in case something happens.
And just so everybody has got the picture on this, I think they do after, I guess it's the law's been in effect in Georgia, where as we do this show here in Georgia, for about 6 months or 9 months or something like that, you cannot hold your phone while you're driving, right? So texting and driving is a problem.
Yeah, that was July of last year, right?
Right.
So
yeah.
You know, it's been a while. But, man, I'll be honest, I'm skeptical that it's going to have a huge effect immediately. I mean, I think over time, technology is going to help solve the problem. Hmm. We're going to get the technologies in our cars so that it's much easier to do all the things that we want to do and that we're going to be tempted to do when we're driving without actually using your hands. But I'm just worried that when you say people can't hold their phones in their hands anymore, now people are just putting them down in their laps so the police won't see. And now they're looking down the whole time and they're not even watching the road. So I'm not sure how much it's making things better and how much it's not. I'll admit I have not seen any kind of a fall off as a result of that law. But I mean, it was illegal to text and drive before that. It's just they kind of expanded it and said flat out, you just can't touch your phone, which I think it's a good rule. You know, I've got a kid who's just learning to drive, and I don't know how I'm going to make sure he doesn't have a phone in the car, but it's the biggest distraction. And it is by far, in my experience, is by far the number one cause of car wrecks and of injuries. So yeah, it's a well-intentioned law. Keep our fingers crossed, see if it actually makes a dent. Like I said, I think we'll probably get out of it through technology.
Now, one more thing before we're coming up on our close here, but one more thing. So motorcycles, you do any work around motorcycles and some of the laws and whatnot around that subject?
Yeah, we have represented a number of people who have been injured while riding on motorcycles. You know, I think the biggest difference between the motorcycle and the car, the biggest difference is just the possibility and the potential for catastrophic injury. Obviously, when you're riding on a motorcycle, you don't have tons of steel protecting you. You've got nothing, some leather pants and a jacket. You know, we've seen some death cases on motorcycles. We've seen some minor collisions that resulted in, there's a minor collision that resulted in a death. Just somebody just changed lanes without looking and just bumped into a motorcycle. But when you're going highway speeds and you don't have a car to protect you, that's not a fender bender. That's now the end of your life, which is just unspeakably tragic. But yeah, you see these kind of little cases that ordinarily would be tiny, but you end up with a motorcyclist getting bumped a little bit off course and he ends up upside down in a ditch on the other side of the road. It's, again, when I talk to my kids, motorcyclists are great. One of my key employees is a avid motorcycle fan. Heather, if you're listening to this, be careful. But yeah, I see my kids, I talk to my kids when we see motorcyclists on the road, and especially the ones who are out there driving really aggressively. And I'm like, hey, kids, it's an organ donor. we need organ donors, and organ donors are great. But, motorcycles make me nervous because I've seen what happens when a motorcyclist gets involved in a car wreck, and it's not good.
Right.
But, I mean, the legal issues are fairly similar.
Gotcha. So, Ken, lots of good information for those that maybe need your help today or may feel like they want to have it down the road or want more information on your firm. Tell them how to get that, how to be in touch.
Yeah, like I say a lot, I hope never to have to represent any of you because it always means that something really bad has happened. But yeah, if anyone wants to find us, wants to learn more about the firm or get in touch with us, you can find us at PiedmontInjuryLaw.com. In addition, those who are local and who are interested in just getting out and doing more, we've been making some efforts this year to just have a bit more fun in, I guess you could call it marketing, but really it's just finding ways to get out and meet people. If you go to 2019isthebestyearever.com.
Oh, wow.
2019 is the best year ever. That is our commitment. 2019isthebestyearever.com. You'll see a list of all the events we're doing. We've been having so much fun. Everything from kickboxing to ballroom dancing, and just invite people to come out and join us, and we get to know more people that way, and everybody gets to have a good time.
A fun attorney.
We try to be, yeah.
We only have fun guests here on Business Radio X. Ken Crossan, Piedmont Injury Law, thanks for being with us.
All right, thanks for having me, John.
Absolutely. Folks, before we sign off today, I want to remind you that if you've got some other kind of headaches that come from administrative tasks and bookkeeping and marketing and presentations, well, I've got somebody else you need to call. Call Essie Escobedo over at Office Angels because she's got a whole team of smart and reliable Office Angels. They're not a temp agency or a replacement firm. Office Angels matches your business support needs with angels who have the talent and expertise necessary to fly in and help you maintain and grow your business on an ongoing or as-needed basis. Your terms are your timeline. They lend that hand and then fly off when the job is done. Call Essie at 770-442-9246. Or go to the website if I bungled that number too much for you, officeangels.us. Chief Executive Angel Essie Escobedo at Office Angels. Give her a call. Folks, I want to remind you that we've got a terrific archives of shows out there on our website, northfulton.businessradiox.com, with a number of guests, great guests like Ken, fun guests like Ken, that all sorts of different areas of expertise, firms. We've had over 400 guests that have come through this studio in the last 3 years, and we're coming up on our three-year anniversary for the North Fulton studio of Business Radio X. So more to come on that. We've got some fun stuff ahead for our studio. So that's it for today. I'm your host, John Ray. Join us again next time for another edition of North Fulton Business Radio.